Welcome to Solace, a podcast about global health problems and solutions. Solace brings together locals and researchers, doctors, anthropologists, artists and activists. They co-create knowledge, stories and artwork around public healthcare in the Philippines. Welcome to a new episode of the Solace podcast.
Hello, I am Dr. Lisa Dikomitis and I'm the principal investigator of Solace. I'm really pleased to introduce this new Solace podcast. This episode is introducing a couple of themes. The first theme is really about clinician researchers. In this episode, we get to hear the stories of two clinicians who trained in the Philippines. Dr. Jello Apostol and Dr. Jeremy de Guzman have studied medicine at the Ateneo de Manila School of Medicine and Public Health. Now, Ateneo is not just any medical school in the Philippines, as you will hear in this episode. Medical students also study business administration, and they are all really enthused by the school's faculty to become social catalysts. You will hear how Jello and Jeremy decided to study medicine and are now clinician researchers in Manila. This podcast also introduces you to the province of Northern Samar. This is where the Solace fieldwork takes place. Please do have a look at our website for beautiful pictures of the province. Northern Samar is located in the eastern Visayas region. Its capital is Cataraman and it's located at the northern tip of the island of Samar. The population of Northern Samar in the 2015 census was 632,000 people. The third theme you will hear about is primary care and public health in the Philippines, also of course the topic of the Solace project. The great thing is that Jello, who's a very busy man, works in the weekends as a rural healthcare doctor in the area he comes from. So he will talk to us about what that work entails, and Jeremy will give us his views on primary care in the Philippines. Dr. Tom Shepherd, global health researcher at Keele and Solace co-investigator, has conducted the interviews with Dr. Jello Apostol and Dr. Jeremy de Guzman.
Can I ask what motivated you to train in medicine and public health?
Well, I was originally trained in undergraduate as a biology major, so I've always been interested in the sciences. And I guess the way it worked for me was at a certain point when we were deciding, when I was deciding what to do, it was either like biological research, which was unheard of even during my time. It was like 2008, or going to medicine. And I view myself mostly as kind of like an omnidisciplinary guy. I've done very well in different parts of science and maybe different parts of the softer sciences. And it's really down to interest. And I kind of thought of myself, well, I wanted to be of service to my country. A biologist can do that. But I thought maybe a physician could do it better. And not everybody becomes a doctor. Well, not everybody becomes a biology scientist anyway, but it was that kind of choice that I thought I wanted to help people. So I went into medicine, basically.
But you also have a pretty strong interest in the arts. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So I've been playing music since I was in secondary school. So I got influenced mainly by my old friends and my brother. He used to listen to a lot of alternative, and I've always liked the sound of the guitar. It was only in high school that we had music classes again, that we were encouraged to pick up an instrument. My family were all musically inclined. My mother played the piano. My father used to play the acoustic, and I kind of just picked it up from there. But compared to my family, I'm kind of the only one left taking it forward, and it's never left me since, because the lessons in music are actually, I've used it a lot in many different things. So a lot of the principles in music that I learned, learning structure, learning melody, learning rhythm, I actually apply it to a lot of different things, even in science. The need to be flexible, but working within a rigid system, that's something that music does all the time. But in the sciences, it seems like it's not there, but I kind of apply the same principle. So it's been interesting.
What made you decide to train in medicine and public health?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I was part of a generation that grew watching ER and Grey's Anatomy. And growing up, I was exposed to all of these wonderful doctors, all very accomplished. And I told myself, someday, I want to be that kind of doctor. And when I entered college, I still wanted to become a doctor. But I also saw that, you know, the Philippines had the best doctors all over Asia, and yet our health system remained very poor, and a lot of people didn't have access to proper and quality health care. And that's when I realized that while being a doctor is good, being a doctor is not enough, especially when it comes to giving the people the kind of health care that they deserve. And when it was time for me to choose the medical school that I wanted to, I had some clarity in me that I didn't just want to become a doctor. I wanted to be a doctor that had a leaning and that had an advocacy in public health, which is why I chose to go to the Ateneo School of Medicine and Public Health.
Tom first asked Jello and then Jeremy about their impressions of Northern Samar. The provincial government of Northern Samar is an official partner in the SOLAS project, and we are working closely together with the provincial health office in our research activities.
Do you remember what your first impressions were?
Yes, my first impression about Northern Samar was, number one, it was so beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to in the Philippines. I remember taking that 5-minute boat ride from mainland Samar to the island of Lauang. And I told that to the boatman, and I told the boatman, you know what, you're very lucky to be living in this very beautiful place. And what the boatman told me struck me and remained with me forever. What he said is, yes, Northern Samar is very beautiful, but we're also very, very poor. And I think that is the reality in many areas in the Philippines. We have very, very beautiful beaches, we have very, very beautiful mountains, and yet these people living in these very beautiful areas and sceneries are also the most poor. So to be surrounded with so much beauty and not able to appreciate it just because you're poor, that's very ironic for me. So that has always been my impression of Northern Samar. Very beautiful, but so many challenges.
I just wonder if you could say a little bit about the healthcare challenges in the province.
Well, the healthcare challenges, surprisingly, or actually not as surprisingly, are beyond healthcare. The challenges that prevent people from achieving or accessing healthcare is not so much the lack of medicines or lack of human resources, but, you know, the larger social determinants, lack of money, poor education, which leads to the persistence of negative health beliefs and superstitions on health. So it's mostly these challenges, both financial and cultural, that underpin, I think they are the root causes of these challenges that we usually see on the surface, like lack of medicines or not enough people or not enough doctors. But really at the bottom of it all is poverty. Poverty remains to be the largest barrier to access of healthcare.
Thinking back to your first visit to Northern Samar, I just wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your first impressions.
Yeah, so the Northern Samar visit is an interesting time for me because the way I was there from the beginning, because it was actually the first thing that I did in my work, because after I graduated from medicine, I had maybe a year doing some odd jobs, trying to start up some things in different parts like health entrepreneurship, health informatics, that kind of thing. That was my interest. It came to a point that I didn't really know the health system that much or public health. And, you know, I mean, they taught it in university, in medical school, but I needed more perspective. I was hungry for that. So I got the job in the in the School of Medicine in Ateneo, and that was one of the first few things that I kind of got into, was that we were trying to develop more research, particularly around my interest in facilities, infrastructure, technology. And then we kind of cold call different provinces from a previous research project that my colleague, Dr. Ramirez, did a year prior. And someone replied back because we used our boss's name to kind of facilitate that. And we visited. After that, they replied, oh, please visit us. We'd love you to be here. And when we were there, I was quite impressed. I'm a city slicker. So I grew up in the city all my life. But the biologist in me never left. When I went there, it was so pristine. I mean, you know, trash here and there, but then white beaches, not a lot of pollution, and a lot of trees. So I was really happy. But of course, the edifice of it hides a lot of the challenges below. So that was really a superficial impression. But I saw the place and, you know, immediately what came into my place. This place has potential. There is a lot that can be done here.
And could you maybe describe some of the challenges that you refer to there?
Well, I'd give a story. Northern Samar is one of the few places I've ever heard of one of their key medical challenges were snake bites. That was because I was trained in the city. Like, what? You get snake bites here? Yeah, quite often, from the sea and from the forests. Okay. So those are kind of the challenges that a rural place and a pristine place like Samar would get. I mean, in if you go to Australia, they probably have an entire bureaucracy dedicated to control of animal hazards like snakes. But in this place, which is kind of isolated, they struggle with that. And it's quite amazing, you know, because my background as a biologist, then in medicine, it was an interesting story for me. And I particularly remember when we were going around. So how do you deal with snake bites? Oh, well, we import antivenin from Manila. And that got me thinking, well, if I were to produce antivenin here, you know, how do you do that? And I actually researched then and there. And there is a way to do it.
I wonder if you could describe the primary care system in the Philippines, but mainly around the distinctions between the urban centres and the more rural places like Northern Samar.
I think the challenges are quite similar in that really it's a lot of operational and supply issues, but also I've come to realize over time it's about patient empowerment issues. Majority of patients, at least in the rural areas, are still quite in the mold of the paternalistic model of medicine, wherein really they're very dependent on expert opinion. And that makes it much more challenging because you don't have quite an empowered patients to actually debate with you about options or even know what their rights are. Some of them know, but they're quite disenfranchised about it. As opposed to urban, they're quite empowered, they're very powerful, but the challenges are mainly different. For example, in urban areas, they're actually more, they both deal with volume issues. But in urban areas, you also deal with environmental issues, crowding. While in rural areas, you deal with the actual opposite, wherein they're too far apart. You have actual oceans between you and any healthcare service. But for both, you'd probably have the same issues that they don't have enough medicines. The healthcare professionals are not as accommodating because there's someone next in line. And sometimes, you know, I'm called by national government to do something, so okay. And both are plagued with financing issues. It's very expensive in the country at all levels of care to get healthier.
In addition to being a researcher, Jello, you also work as a physician in a rural health unit. Could you describe where your rural health unit is and then talk a little bit about what a typical day of practicing in a rural health unit is like?
Yes, you're correct, Tom. My Monday to Friday work is that I'm with AHEALS as a health systems researcher. But every Saturday and Sunday, I go home to our small town called San Luis, Pampanga, where I spend my weekend with family, with community. But I also work as a rural health physician. It was actually an innovation that we started because in the Philippines, usually rural health clinics are only open Monday to Friday. And during weekends, people have no other place to go to. So they would have to travel 1 to 2 hours to the nearest hospital just to seek care, even primary care services. So one of the things that I did after graduating was to strike a deal with the mayor. So if you would let me work, if you'd let me use the rural health clinic every weekend. It's a good source of income for me. It's not so much, but at least there's an opportunity to provide continuous 24-hour services for the people, and they won't need to have to go to or travel 1 to 2 hours just to seek primary care services. What is it like? What is the usual day like? Because most of the work that we do at the rural health clinic is primary care, so it's mostly outpatient consults, but also a lot. Saturdays we do outpatient consults, but our Sundays are reserved for community education. We usually do it when families are together, usually after they go to mass. So we would schedule family development sessions, and depending on what topic is on season around that time. So if, say for example, July is nutrition month, so we would have community or family sessions on nutrition. So that's how it is. So Saturdays are mostly outpatient consults. If there's a patient that needs further referral, we refer them to the provincial or to the district hospital. And that's good because instead of the patients going directly to the provincial or district hospital, and it would be very congested there during weekends because the rural health clinics are closed, we are able to, you know, have some sort of gatekeeping function where we would be able to treat some of the cases and only refer those that need to be referred to the provincial and district hospitals. But I think what's also good is that because during weekends, that is the only time when families are gathered. And if you want to do family planning sessions, the weekends are best because, you know, in the Philippines, family planning sessions, the problem is that only the mothers would attend, because the fathers are either too lazy or not available because of work. And also because these are being conducted during weekdays when, you know, not everyone is present. But during weekends, there are high chances that everyone is present. The same goes with, you know, doing health education with kids. That's one of the things that we've been able to start ever since we've been doing our community education sessions during the weekends. We are able to talk to kids. Because, you know, usually Mondays to Fridays, they're in school. And once they're done with school, it's already time for dinner. So there isn't much time, there isn't much opportunity to interact with these children except for weekends. So that's what we get to do during Sundays. We would schedule play therapies for the kids while their parents would have family development sessions. And it's not just me. I think what's very important to know is that our approach is that we are a healthcare team. I have, right now, 15 healthcare volunteers that help me see patients, that manage some of the more common and simple cases, and also do the family education sessions.
And in your rural health unit practice, Jello, what kind of illnesses or conditions do you find are presenting quite frequently?
Well, the most common, let me answer that question in two ways. First, for children, the most common presenting conditions are upper respiratory tract infections, diarrhea, and increasingly now malnutrition. So I say condition because not just diseases, but conditions must also be looked into. For adults, the most common presenting illness would still be upper respiratory tract infection, but also musculoskeletal complaints, because St. Louis, the community which I serve in, is mostly a farming and fishing community. So the people are exposed to, you know, to backbreaking work. They would spend, like, you know, most days under the sun planting rice or catching fish. So musculoskeletal illnesses are very common in our area. But interestingly, when we started seeing more male patients, because we started opening the rural health unit during weekends, we started seeing more male patients in the rural health clinic. And it was then that we saw that sexual problems among men was, in fact, a growing problem. We started being able to catch these problems on erectile dysfunction and sexual health. And what I found most surprising is that, what I really appreciated is that now the men are opening up, because before they didn't have a venue to talk about these things. Certainly, they won't be able to talk about these openly with their friends because there's a shame component to that. But now, at least, you give them an opportunity to talk about these things that, you know, need to be addressed. That need to be addressed because men's health is an important component of family health, not only women's health. So,
and do you find that you have mental health cases presenting in your sort of primary care environment as well?
We are starting to see these mental health problems, and most of our mental health patients are actually adolescents. And when we did our own social investigation on this, accompanied by some of my volunteers, we saw that one of the main drivers or causes of these prevalence or increasing prevalence of mental health issues among adolescents is really the breaking down of the Filipino family. Remember, I told you we live in a rural health area. And one way or another, people will find a way to get out of that, you know, rut, and they would seek for employment either in Central or Imperial Manila, or would try to venture or try their luck abroad. And, well, you know, most of these people do end up, you know, enjoying the economic gains of, you know, of exploring job opportunities in other places. It comes at the expense of the integrity of the Filipino family. So you have these kids being separated from their mothers as early as the age 2, or some even as early as the age 1, and would only see them after 5 years. So, you know, they and I think these do affect, you know, the mental health of these children early on, and, you know, the symptoms, and eventually some of the syndromes or the disease eventually manifest when they reach their adolescent age.
Could you say a little bit about how important public health is in strengthening the primary care system in the Philippines, specifically in the rural areas?
I think it's quite important. And honestly, I always believe it's embedded. Part of my perspective is there's a large overlap between primary care and public health in the sense that if you scale personal care services, they actually become population health services. But there are things you do in primary care services, like, say, spirometry. That's unsustainable if you're going to do that to everybody. So that's mainly very specific for clinical conditions. But the same could be said of, like, epidemiologic investigations where you're actually doing outbreaks. That's a completely population-based service. But there's a large overlap. And in reality, in the Philippines, there are people who do primary care also do population health, public health. And they're quite interfaced with each other. While you're a clinician, in that setting, even if you don't say you're doing public health, you are. Because you are part of a setup that does that almost by default. That is the design of how our primary cares are set up.
Researchers from Keele University and Ateneo de Manila University are currently collaborating on 2 global health projects. The Newton-funded IPRAN project that focuses on doctors working in remote, rural and underserved areas and how their training can be improved. And of course the SOLAS project, jointly funded by the AHRC and MRC, which focuses on those living in those remote, rural areas. Tom first asked Jeremy and then Jello what they hope will come out of the partnerships between the 2 universities.
Basically improve health outcomes, make it more accessible. And actually, for me, it's really empowering patients and making governance better. I think these are the necessary inputs and the kind of collaborations needed to push places that have been in the malaise for so long to kind of move forward. And, you know, for me at least, even if the way it's like the long arm of the law, I would say it's the long arm of public health. We may not see effects now, but hopefully it will cascade down maybe 5-10 years later with a new generation or with people starting to think about development, holistic. We are only part of that. And I would be a little egotistic if I say that what we're going to do here will have such a big impact. It will change things. We are just a cog in a wheel, but we are but we're still cogs in the wheel. So you have to do your part to move things forward. And I think there will be more collaborations moving forward. It's a freer world, whether we believe it or not. And that's my only hope, that it would keep the momentum. We'd be able to maintain, if not improve, the healthcare for people, ultimately health outcomes for the people, make it much more, maybe understand their context more and move them towards a better state of development.
What do you hope will come from the current work that we're doing as a partnership between Ateneo and Keele?
Well, iPrime is about determining or mapping out the competencies needed by primary care physicians if they are to serve in rural and underserved areas like Northern Samar or San Luis, where I came from. And what I'm really hoping for it for the work that we are doing right now is really being able to identify the type of inputs that we must invest in these rural areas where the need is the greatest. Because right now, it's very easy to just deploy a doctor or just to donate medicines. But whether these inputs are appropriate, of high quality, adequate, whether we're talking about competencies of these human resources for health or medicines and other services, it's usually not being looked into. So I guess that's the greater message here. It's not just about giving physicians to people. It's not just about giving medicines to people. It's giving the people, the physicians, and the health services and the medicines that they need and that they deserve.
Solace is jointly funded by the Arts and Humanities and Medical Research Council in the United Kingdom. Solace is one of the Global Challenges research projects and is led by Dr. Lisa Decomites at Keele University. For more information, please visit the Solace website at www.solace-research.com. That's www.solace-research.com, or follow us on Twitter @solace_research.